You're listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Arab Voices next. Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. For those who have been listening to this show, you know by now that PhotoFest 2014 International Biennial, Contemporary Arab Photographic Art, is well underway in Houston. And this month, April, is the National Arab American Heritage Month. So last night, the Arab American Cultural and Community Center in Houston held a roundtable discussion about art with PhotoFest artists. It was a special event marking the beginning of a month-long festivities planned by the ACC. Today, we will listen to that roundtable discussion with PhotoFest artists. But first, let's start with Arab Voices community calendar. PhotoFest 2014 International Biennial, as I mentioned, is now being held in Houston through April 27th with various activities and events scheduled. PhotoFest 2014 Biennial focuses on contemporary Arab photographic art, including video and multimedia installations. The Biennial showcased dozens of leading contemporary Arab artists using photography and related visual media to address a broad range of aesthetic and cultural values impacting Arab culture. For more information about PhotoFest and all of its events, visit photofest.org, and that's photofest.org. PAX Christi Texas 2014 State Conference will be held in Houston this Saturday, April 5th. Christian Peacemaker Teams, Peacemaking in Palestine is the topic at the conference. Bob Holmes, Brazilian priest and an active member of Christian Peacemaker Teams, will speak about his peacemaking work in the Middle East and especially the often dangerous work of peacemaking in Palestine. This conference will be held on Saturday, April 5th at the Dominican Center for Spirituality on 6501 Almeida. For more information, visit paxchristitexas.org. The Council on American Islamic Relations will hold the annual Muslim Youth Leadership Symposium on April 12th at Rice University. For more information or to register, visit the website mylshouston.com. .wordpress.com. Iman Academy will hold its annual fundraising gala under the theme Continuing the Journey. The guest speakers will be Sheikh Abdul Rauf Al-Khawalda, Sheikh Waleed Basuni, and Imam Wazir Ali. The gala will be held on Sunday, April 13th at 3 p.m. at the Crown Plaza Hotel on 8686 Kirby Drive. For more information, visit imanacademy.org. James A. Baker III Institute at Rice University will hold the 2014 International Conference on Gender and Human Rights in the Middle East under the theme, The Evolving Roles of Women in the Arab World. This conference aims to ignite discussion about the roles of Arab women in the political, economic, and private spheres and to shed light on the evolution of these roles over the past few decades. This conference will be held on April 24th. For more information or to register, visit bakerinstitute.org. The Arab American Cultural and Community Center, as I mentioned earlier, in partnership with several Arab American organizations and in celebration of April as the National Arab Heritage Month, is organizing several events that coincide with PhotoFest 2014 biennial, highlighting the works of many contemporary Arab photographers and visual artists. The ACC is doing so to raise the visibility of the Arab heritage by showcasing the diversity of artistic talent in our midst and to foster a greater understanding of Arab culture within our multicultural Houston community. The Heritage Month will include an exhibition featuring contemporary Arab artists working in a variety of media. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, April 3rd, there will be an art exhibition titled Houston, Home to Contemporary Artists from the Arab World, and that will be held at 7:30 p.m. at Be Human Gallery, close to I-10 and Gessner. There will also be a book signing event with award-winning poet Dr. Fadi Jouda and history professor Dr. Osama Maqdisi of Rice University on April 8th, also at Be Human Gallery. On April 14th, there will be a screening of the film The Muslims Are Coming by Dean Obidallah at the University of Houston. And on April 16th, there will be poetry and music with Dr. Fadi Jouda and Rahim Al-Hajj at the Rothko Chapel. And on April 27th, there will be a community picnic at the ACC. For more information on any of the events I just mentioned and a list of many others, visit our website, and that's arabvoices.net. Last night, the ACC, the Arab American Cultural and Community Center in Houston, held a special event marking the beginning of the month-long festivities, and it was a roundtable discussion and reception with four PhotoFest artists, Sama Ashabi, Khalid Hafiz, Steve Sabella, and Stephen Stapleton. I attended that event and recorded it. Tonight, we will listen to that roundtable discussion. The voice you will hear first is that of Dr. Rudaina Basiri, board member at the ACC, who made the opening remarks and introduction. Let's listen in.
Welcome, everybody. On behalf of the Board of Directors of the Arab American Community and Cultural Center, I welcome you all to this first of a series of events celebrating the National Arab American Heritage Month. We welcome all of you. And for those of you who are from out of town, I'd like to tell you that the ACC is the only organization that serves the local Arab American community, regardless of nationality, ethnicity, religion, or gender. We have a mission to serve the Arab American community here in Houston, as well as foster a greater understanding of Arab heritage in Houston. And accordingly, we jumped at the opportunity to work with PhotoFest and their ongoing biennial highlighting contemporary Arab art from the Middle East and North Africa. I'd like to welcome Fred Baldwin and Wendy Watrous, the PhotoFest co-founders, for being here with us tonight. I want to thank them for bringing an unprecedented look at Arab art from the Middle East, and truly a view from the inside, so thank you. I'd like to thank Garen Von Rock, the curator, and our Arab art scholar here, and many thanks go to Zoe Goldman for working with us and helping us put this together. You've been so professional, and it's been a pleasure working with you, Zoe. Thank you. I'd like to also introduce you to the PhotoFest exhibiting artists who are in the audience, Mr. George Fikri Ibrahim. We're thrilled to have you with us today. And Mr. Ahmed Jadallah, the only photojournalist exhibiting at PhotoFest. Before I start, I would like to thank our sponsorship, Mr. Nijad and Mrs. Zena Faris, Dr. Raymond Sawaya, Dr. Hassan Rida, Mrs. Dania Dandashli, Mr. Ali Dahar, Mr. Wadi Al-Hajj, Mr. Fadi Dimasi, our President Abdel Adam Khadiri, Mr. Muhammad Bughaba, Dr. Ali Al-Himyari, Dr. Nidan Muqaddam, Mrs. Dania Dandashli. Thank you all for your sponsorship. This event would not have been possible without you. I want to introduce for you right now the roundtable participants that we have. We are thrilled to have you. And I'll start with Mrs. Sama Al-Shaibi. Sama is Iraqi born. Her father is Iraqi, but her mother is Palestinian. And she is a professor, an associate professor at the University of Arizona. She negotiates space in her artwork, and she also explores the interaction of people competing for resources and power. She also, her artwork reflects the exploration of the aftermath of war and exile. Sama has had more than 10 solo exhibits, and she has also exhibited in group exhibits, the last one being the 2012 Venice Biennale, 13th Venice Biennale. Next to Sama is Khaled Hafiz from Egypt. Khaled gave up a practice in medicine to become an artist. His work involves multimedia, video, painting, of course, photography. And he is a Fulbright Fellow. He had more than 21 solo exhibits, and he has exhibited in the Contemporary Art Museum in Denmark, as well as the Johnson Museum of Modern Art in New York, the Saatchi Gallery in London. And our moderator, Dr. Walid Gaber, is an associate professor at Baylor College of Medicine, and he is one of the treasures that has been recently added to the board of directors of the ACC. Next to him is Steve Sabella. Steve is born in Jerusalem, currently resides in Berlin. Steve has a master's degree in photographic arts from the University of Westminster with in distinction, and a master's in art business from Sotheby's Arts Institute in London. He put shape and form to the emotions and the psychic experience of exile. And he was recently awarded in 2008 the Alan Auerbach Award by the Akademie der Kunst in Berlin. We are happy to have you here, Steve. And last but not least, Stephen Stapleton. He's a London-based artist, curator, and co-founder of Edge of Arabia. Edge of Arabia is an important platform and an arts initiative that attempts to bring awareness and promote art from the Middle East and North Africa. You can tell him how that idea came to him with two Saudi artists that are also PhotoFest exhibiting artists, if I understand it correctly, in Asir in Saudi Arabia. So I'll let Walid take over.
So thank you, Daina. When I was putting this presentation together, I went alphabetically, which turned out to be great because this way Sama is first, because I was so worried if Sama is not first, I would be told off because of gender issues. So, it turned out to be lucky. So I would like to go through some of the artworks that they have exhibited and ask each one of them to tell us about the artwork, about who they are, and introduce themselves to us. So
first of all, good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for having me back in Houston. I was here a couple of years ago with the Palestine Film Festival at Rice University speaking. Such an honor to be back, and I haven't really had the opportunity to say publicly a big, great thanks to Wendy and Fred for bringing this all together. I was sitting in my room today and noted that this was the first time in a decade of exhibiting my work internationally that I've had my dear friends and colleagues come to the United States. Well, I'm sure they've shown in the United States, but for me to be showing alongside them in the United States when we've had so many exhibitions together in Europe and the Middle East. So it's a tremendous opportunity to be in my now adopted country, the United States, with my colleagues and friends. So I graduated from University of Colorado Boulder in 2004. I started being an artist. I would say that I understood that I was an artist sometime during undergraduate school when I went to be a war photographer and study under the great legend John H. White, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist. And that's where my beginnings were because I grew up in the Iraq-Iran War, and then I was displaced to many different countries after another as a Palestinian Iraqi. I had a very big problem, our family had a big problem finding permanent residency in a country that would take us. Eventually, we came to the United States, and I lived here for a number of years and was able to go to school when I became a green card holder and got some student aid to be able to go to school. And I found out when I was trying to make documentary photography in my photojournalist class, but speak to my interests about war and conflict. And I didn't really know any wars that were going on in Chicago except for gangs, which was not my work. So I put myself in the photograph and drooled over my body in the walls, and my professors were pulling their hair out and said, Sama, this is photojournalism, you can't put yourself in the picture. So I stayed in my classes and I continued my work, and my professor said, I think you're an artist, you're not a photojournalist, but keep doing your work. I decided to go to graduate school the day of September 11th when all of these images started to come to TV. And I started doing my first projects, which included my body, but my body was not representing myself as Sama al-Shaibi, but the countries that I was speaking to and the issues. In this one, it's Say Nothing, and it comes from the work that is showing here now in Houston at the PhotoFest Biennial, which deals, I think, with the only probably body of work where I'm specifically dealing with gender, and it's the issues of conflating war with democracy. I'm sorry, conflating democracy with giving women their rights in Iraq. Women always enjoyed their rights in Iraq, and it was a way we sold the war in the United States, a very unpopular war that was turning out not how the Bush government had hoped. And I looked at the issues of the landscape, the lives of women in Iraq and how they deteriorated, and as well as the physical landscape, how it changed and shifting. And I used the great legacy of Iraq, its wonderful contributions to mankind, and juxtapose that inscription of violence and its celebration of its wonderful history together with my body. Thank you.
So, well, those are really my parents. My father was a doctor in the Egyptian army, and my mother is a cardiologist. They're both retired, both alive. And my mother was into the army twice, and she led the army colonel and retired as a professor of cardiology. Both influenced my being an artist because they never believed in what I did. But this is serious. I mean, they forced me to study medicine, but I worship them because what happened actually is my brother, who's right there, he's a banker, so he kept the family name. And because they forced me to study medicine, I kept the name of my grandfather. Hence, his name is Omar Dunia. My name is Khaled Hafiz. Initially, I started painting at the age of 5 years old, and when I'm asked about who am I now, if I'm asked to identify myself as an artist, I say I'm a painter and filmmaker. I use video as a tool of expression, but I hate to call myself video artist. Sometimes, actually, I disdain video art. I'm more into a filmmaker. I like to write narrative. I like to tell stories. And as I grew from my childhood to adulthood, I guess part of my life was spent in a dark room watching film. Today, my practice spans the mediums of painting, photography, video, and installation art. In my work, I explore the notion of what it is, the notions of identity in general, at large, but according to each medium. Like in my painting, I try to explore the notion what it is to be Egyptian, because I think the Egyptian identity is quite complex. While in my video and in my film work, I explore notions of identity in terms of what it is to be an Arab or a Middle Eastern with features like mine, in a post-September 11 world. The whole thing started when each time I cross a border, I'm being practically the only person who has to pass through a random check. So the idea is usually it's me, either me or me and the Chinese, but always I have to pass the random check. The random check is always, it happens. It's the way I look, not what passport I carry. And this actually, since the beginning, it never bothered me. And I always looked at it, I took it lightly, and later it drove me to explore, to delve into that actually, and start to explore in my video what actually led to this random check. I believe that what led to that is simply the modern political history of the Arab world that started in Egypt with the history of revolutions in the mid-50s and exportation of independence. I think it's reminiscent to today's exportation of democracy that happens from certain hegemons towards certain parts of the world. And then I will pass to my friend Steve Sabel.
Hi. I just wanted to say about the image before, I'm investigating why images look better than reality. I have no idea. It's definitely a construct, and I have no idea where they got it from. Anyway, I come from Jerusalem's old city. Actually, I was born in the old city. And early on, I was investigating the invisible world we live in, except that my mission got interrupted because I grew up under Israeli occupation. So it took me almost 37 years to defy that occupation and get rid of it once and for all. The physical occupation is given, but what bothered me was how Israelis or the system itself managed to colonize my imagination. So I saw my work, how to free myself, how to free my imagination from every residue of the occupation. So what I needed to do was something horrific. I needed to uproot myself completely from where I came from, not because I'm embarrassed to come from Jerusalem or to come from Palestine. It's exactly the opposite. I'm so proud where I come from, but I needed to live free. And to live free, I needed to let go of the system completely and create a new system that's only true to myself and to my mind and to my imagination. Ironically, I had to do this through art. And then once I freed myself, I found myself imprisoned by my own art. As you can see, I do collage, so I try to recreate the world through collage. And over the years, art helped me free myself, and then art itself became my occupier. So I needed to let go of art completely so that I can live free again. So happily, I'm happy I've done it. And you can see this was done in London. Those were my exile years. And I thought I'll be there forever, for eternity. It turned out there is another way of looking at life. So I had to change my perception and my consciousness. Thank you.
I'm British Norwegian. I'm obviously the odd one out. But, my story really connects with the idea of artists and the connections that artists are able to make beyond the borders and the sort of polarization that happened as we grew up between the Western world and the Middle East. And my father was in the Royal Air Force. You know, he was Wing Commander Eric Julian Stapleton, and I remember going to him when I was about 13 and saying, I don't think I really want to join the Royal Air Force. And he was like, well, it's a good idea, because there's like the shrinking army and stuff. But he kind of encouraged me, and I took this creative path. And I started to become really interested, perhaps because as the son in a military family, you move every 2 years and you have a kind of nomadic life. I started to naturally fall into this category of a kind of travel artist. I was always in a new place. And I started to look into the history of travel artists, particularly in the 19th century, and the idea of an artist explorer, an artist that go to places and come back with information and ideas. And I really felt that in the media age, when you had this very powerful story being told about the rest of the world through the media, that this idea of the artist, the lone artist out in the world, had lost all its power, but that they should have a place, because of that subjective view, that human contact, that small story, actually provided a very important alternative to the way that the media was creating this narrative around the world. So in fact it was 1999, I decided to go to the Middle East. It was before 9/11 as an artist, and we spent 3 years preparing for a trip, and I found myself in 2002 leaving England in a Toyota Hilux truck that we called Yasmin. We drove down through Eastern Europe, across Turkey, crossed over into Iran at Dogger Bayazit, and ended up spending a year as artists on the road in the Middle East during the build-up to the war in Iraq, which in retrospect sort of has its own story, but at the time we didn't know how that story was going to unfold. And as British artists, I think we understand images, and we started to deconstruct this story that was being told through images in the media. And being in Tehran in Christmas 2002, you were watching both sides at the same time. And as artists, we were connecting with artists. That was our way into the society. And artists have a funny way of kind of opening their sketchbook or opening their camera and connecting very quickly across a divide that other people perhaps can't. It's a sort of magic code that artists can have. I ended up crossing from Yemen to Saudi in March 2003, literally as the invasion of Iraq happened in those couple of days. And that's when my artistic career sort of began to disappear, and my career to support a group of artists that I met there started to take shape, because I felt that here was a group of artists who really were at the center of a story, and yet nobody knew about that voice. When I say the center of a story, I'm talking about the artists practicing at the center of the Islamic world at a time when that center of the Islamic world had influenced a huge geopolitical economic shift. And these artists were marginalized not only within their own society, but within their own street because of the nature of Saudi Arabia. So my story begins like this as an artist, and I've championed those artists for better or worse, because now I miss my own practice as an artist. But something extraordinary has happened, is that those artists have developed and risen to the challenge of the opportunities that our organization have given them. They've developed an incredible soft power, I think, in their own society, and they've opened up a lot of channels between especially Saudi Arabia and the rest of the world.
Well, actually, this is a very interesting prelude to where I would like to take this conversation. We have an associate professor of art. We have an artist who is sponsoring younger artists. We have an artist who is prolific in writing articles, which are very interesting. I ask you all to go and read Steve's articles. One of them, which I, and Stephen, of course, who is supporting artists. So I want to start with Steve's article, Valued in the West, Sold in the East. And I want to ask you all, and start with Steve, so how is your work, or how do you think art is influenced by collectors, by galleries? You know, we all know that in the, you know, 19th century, all the French galleries, you know, were very influential in the Impressionist movement and so on. But we have a peculiar thing on top of the ordinary question, and that is, as you've said in the article, you know, made in the East, valued in the West. What's your opinion on this? Stephen, of course, must have a lot to say about that. So I'll start with Steve. And then, you know, just join in and...
Well, it's a huge topic. I mean, I don't know how much I can tackle from that. But the thing is, galleries are gatekeepers of the art world. This is should be their perception in life. And unfortunately, many of them are not. Not even in Europe and America, and definitely many of them, not many in the Middle East, are gatekeepers. They tend to treat artists like art logos. And some artists, I see them as brands. Like, let's say in Europe, I see them as brands. So this means the gallery needs sometimes to adjust to the brand. Where in the Middle East, galleries treat artists like locals. They adjust them, they change them, they form them. And they don't realize that artists need to change. Oh, wow. Now, I'm being very critical about that, but don't think this is like the scene itself is all like that. I'm just saying, because I experience galleries in many countries, I think there should be synergy between the gallery and the artist. Both need to have the same vision. Now, artists do this fatal mistake. They go for galleries that they don't appreciate their work, and they just go for the name of the gallery, rather than finding a gallery that is interested in their work. And the same thing with galleries. They tend to find names to work with because they want to work with this artist or that artist, rather than looking at the art itself and trying to understand the artist's journey. So I think galleries and collectors, even collectors, I have a problem with many collectors. I only have, with all my respect to many people who buy my work, many collectors, they say, I bought Steve Savella, I bought Khaled Hafez. No, I'm not for sale. It's my art is for sale. I'm sorry. So you can't buy Khaled Hafez. So I always stop people and say, I bought you. No, you didn't buy me. You bought a work of art of mine, and I'm happy you enjoy it and you like it. And then you find collectors buying the work of many, many artists, and they have no idea what collecting is about. And if you spoke about history, I mean, collecting is a passion. You collect with your eyes, not with your pocket. Buy something you like. I never bought art in my life because I never had money. But last week, I'm so proud to say I bought the first artwork in my life. Why? It arrested me. You know, and you know, hardly anything satisfies my eyes. And when I saw this artwork, I said, whoa, dude. You know, then I asked how much. She said it's $1,500. I said, I take it. You know, even though I can spare the $1,500 because I really liked the work.
So I guess, I mean, I'm trying to get to the point of the fact that you are Arab artists. And that we are, well, so then you want to get into this discussion. That was one of the questions we've had. Would you consider yourself an artist from the Arab world or an Arab artist? Or is there any such thing as an Arab artist? And I will let Steve answer this.
Question. Oh, yeah. Am I an Arab artist? That's a very good question. That's a great question. I have perfect red hair, white. Now, I'll go back to, you know, I was with an artist called Faisal Samra, a Saudi artist in Jeddah, and we were at this conference at this girl, ladies' university called Darul Hekman. He made this statement, and it was really powerful, and it was about how the market and the light that's shone on which artists are important kind of takes advantage of free attention. And this is a very cynical way to look at it, but after 9/11, and after the rise of some forces and the fall of some forces in the world, a light was shone on the Middle East, the same way that a light was shone on China after Tiananmen Square or on Russia after certain things. And the market and the galleries and the energy took advantage because it's free advertising in a way. It's fashion in a strange kind of way. It's a nasty way to look at it. But I think his statement was correct that after that, the Middle East took some years but became a kind of, this idea of an Arab artist and Arab artwork became part of a brand that took advantage of this free attention. And I think it's important for artists to recognize that in their own journey. Maybe I'm a good example, you know, a British artist that gave up my practice in a way because there's no light. I'm the generation below Damien Hirst. They killed it for us. There's no way for me to compete with that energy, which was the last energy in the art world, the thing. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but there is just one other point I want to make, which is the idea of art as a status symbol and art as a commodity. I think these are very two important things for artists to be aware of in the Middle East. Art is definitely a status symbol, Middle Eastern art, within a class of very wealthy people. And it's not a bad thing. It's always been a status symbol, but it's important to be aware. The artist is aware where their artwork ends up, and the collector is also aware of how they're using it. You know, is it a status symbol or is it a point of discussion for the idea behind the artwork? And I've seen that because when we started, nobody was interested in these artists from Saudi Arabia. Now it's the hottest thing in the art market, and it's definitely become a kind of status symbol and, of course, a commodity, an investment commodity in these things. And it's not a bad or good thing. It's just let's be aware of what it is and why.
I guess to turn the question around before I come to my left side, I mean, would you think that a person from the Arab world is more likely to see what you're getting at, more so than any other person? Or is this irrelevant? Art is art. It's beyond that. There is the visual aspect. I don't know if Sema wants to ask.
You go ahead.
No, please.
I don't understand the question.
I mean, so we're back to the point of, would you consider yourself an Arab artist? Is there an Arab art? Are you an artist irrespective of that ethnic? What's your views of the ethnicity of art? Could we say...
I don't know if the chicken came before the egg or the egg came before the chicken or whatever, something like that. They say. But, I mean, for me, I know my mother was a painter, and I know that all my life as a child, she took us to museums, and we painted in the house, and we listened to Mozart, and... she cultivated the creative imaginations with everything small. She loved nature. But I also know I was displaced and dislocated. And my mother's Palestinian, and I was brought up around the kitchen table hearing of stories of loss. And then I experienced war as a small child, and I saw my friends pass away. And I was uprooted. And so when people tell me if the collectors made the market, or if we have 10 years or 15 or 20 years until it's finished, I want to tell them to go because this is who I am, and I know every artist has a real reason for being there that I show with, and it's something that's around us and we keep having to deal with, talking about whether we would be important or not. We don't know in the end. I think Steve Sabella's work is incredible, and I think he would have made it despite the scene being there or not. To what level, I'm not sure. I'm a professor. I have to teach students and groom them in a time where there are a university teaching art in every state in the United States, and I have to help them find a way to know that they're contributing and they're being listened to, and to sustain that practice, and to know it's important, and to find satisfaction for their soul as artists, but not to ignore the fact that there is a status, and there is a commodity there, and that you're intersecting it, and you don't want to lose your faith in your work or have it be changed by those who are trying to impress upon you. It's a very complicated conversation, but I am proud to be Arab. I know that being Arab influenced my work. I find several interesting visual connections between myself and many other Arab artists, even though I studied in the West and I didn't know their works before I made my works. So I find that's interesting, that there might be a vernacular there. And in the same time, I know we are speaking to an individual voice within us that has nothing to do with being from where we're from, that it is something that, you know, is a calling in life that you cultivate through what's around us and what is innate.
Would you like to add something?
Yeah, I'd like to build on what my friend said, but I'll speak about my own personal experience, actually. I was twice, on debates in two different occasions. One of them was in not Art Basel, but Scope Basel, which is one of the satellite fairs very close to Art Basel. And then one time, I think it was during the Sharjah Biennial in 2007, as early as 2007, when Walid's question came up, is there something called Arab artist or African artist or, you know, like any artist affiliated to geographical distribution? I think coming from Egypt, where I am, there is a generation of artists who actually managed to do the weaning from their own professors very early. And those people refrain categorically, this category of artists, those young artists, I'm saying young, they're now like 35 to 40, I'm 50. Those artists, they categorically refuse the label of any label that is put before the word artist. They believe that art is universal, etc. Personally, I don't have any allergy of being labeled as an Arab artist at all. And I don't have any allergy of being labeled as African artist or Mediterranean artist or Middle East artist. I have moved, or international artist at that, you know, like just artist, it works as well. I have moved with those in between brackets labels. You know, like I exhibited in Africa, in Dakar and in Mali. I was prized and I moved as an African artist. I was never prized from an Arab body, but yet I'm, whether I like it or not, I'm Arab and I enjoy it, actually, being Egyptian, because Egyptian, it means Arab, Middle Eastern, Mediterranean, African, ancient Egyptian, Judeo-Christian, Arabo-Islamic, it's all that. It's cumulative. Personally, my generation, I don't think anybody has the allergy of being described as anything, as long as I'm part of exhibitions that are meaningful. Like, I do remember when Karen Adrien-Van Gogh in 2007 came up with the idea of the past out of the present out of the past millennia, at the Kunstmuseum Bonn, she invited 15 artists. One of them, very young, the youngest, refused categorically to be part, because he said that I don't want to be, I think he told Karen that this exhibition will damage my career or something like that. He was 21 then. Karen was generous enough to invite an artist who was 21, who tells her this exhibition will damage my career because they're only Egyptian artists. I think, of course, this artist, I think, is delusional, because he's mentored and trained by certain people who actually proposed to him this proposal that art is universal. But on the other hand, I accepted to be in Karen's show because Karen's show was curated. It's not a bus of Egyptian artists or a bus of Arab artists or a bus of African artists, because this in itself is not enough to do an exhibition at all. So actually, I accept to be labeled as anything, as artist or as anything else, as long as the exhibition is meaningful and it is curated and it has a meaning and the works talk to each other and there is a subject and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't have this allergy at all.
I just want to say something small. It's not being embarrassed about being artist from the Arab world or being an Arab artist or Palestinian artists. I'm just asking myself, why are we debating here among, well, the audience is mostly from the Arab world, why are we debating Arab art? Why we have an identity crisis? Why can't we speak about art? Why do we need always to speak about the identity of where we come from? I mean, I notice this happening from Morocco to Kuwait. And all I'm saying, it's us who are putting ourselves always in a circle, in a loop. We need to break this circle and become independent thinkers and just artists.
I agree with what Steve said exactly, and that's the hope for the future, and I think we have to make that reality now, too. But in the same time, I had a wonderful dinner at Rudaina's house last night, and her brother made a very incredible point. He said, because I was like, we're not stars, we're just human beings. And he said, you are our stars, because there are so many people out in the Arab world who are embarrassing us and saying this is not who we are, and we're not, people misunderstand us around the world. And so sometimes there is something about having this incredible, positive, complicated, diverse approach to the world to show this variety and our intelligence and intellect and our history and our future and our, you know, it's there's a reason sometimes we want this, there people around us want to claim the Arabness of us, and I understand that too.
Everyone's had two goes apart from me, so I want to have two goes. No, I want to say this, it relates to a later question, I think, but I'm going to blow it now, but about the idea of history of art and the idea that, yes, there is this light, and, you know, I can see it. There's enormous attention on your region, and you have endlessly people putting the mic in front of your voice, which is an amazing privilege. And I totally agree that it shouldn't be wasted on endless conversations about who we are. You know, like, it'll pass. It will pass, just like it passed from Paris to New York to the YBAs, wherever it goes, to the whatever seed and stuff. But, like, to use it and use your chance to tell your story, what you care about, whether it be an injustice or whether it be a connection. You know, we've all got our personal things that we believe in. But I think I'm endlessly at these Middle East art conferences. Either it's too academic and it talks about, you know, art about art, or it talks always about what is Arab identity. And I think it's a missed opportunity to tell the stories and the ideas, the intellectual ideas, the stories, which are really what I think needs to come out, because these are the alternative stories to that big story, which is incredibly negative.
What I wanted to say before actually builds on what Stephen and Sama said, actually. That's what exactly what Stephen said is what I'm mentoring the young artists who come to my studio, that they should not stop at all at labels. Labels are not at all bothering, and they're not important, and they're not important. They're not life-threatening, and they're not to stop in front. And if you are confronted one day by something like that, tackle it. What I'm doing with my younger peers is skilling them with management skills in order to manage their own careers, with skills that allows them to be heard and read on the international level as much as the local level. Develop their own verbatim and their own words according to their own voice dimension. I'm working with them one-to-one, actually, to work only on their strong points at my studio. With the objective that one day, when they exhibit on the international scene, they are capable of telling their own stories and not stop in front of minor labels or other.
So I think that's a very interesting conclusion of this. But let me take it one step further, and I agree with Stephen that, and with Steve, with all what has been said, that we need to move beyond this. But I have a personal feeling that this is a new thing. I have a personal feeling, which is my own opinion, is that there's a new era of Arab art, that art has somehow seen a very bad period, I don't know, hundreds of years or whatever, that and now there is a renaissance in Arab art. Maybe it's still picking up momentum. What's your thoughts on this? Is this a new era? Are we entering a new era of art? Is this sustainable? Is this maybe, as Stephen and some of you have alluded to, just because the world got interested in us curiously after 9/11? Or is our society moving? Do you feel it as an artist that there is a lot to be said? This is something new that is happening? And I, whoever wants to start, I will, hang it.
Can I start?
Yes.
Okay, I'll speak about the case of Egypt, and I'll do it in exactly 60 seconds. And I think that our revolution started 15 years ago in the arts, in Egypt. And I think in Lebanon it started probably at the same time or 1 year earlier. Egypt and Lebanon are a very particular case. This revolution that started, it started with music, theater, writing. I work now with a publisher who started with young Egyptian writers, especially female writers in the 90s. All of them are translated now to several languages. So I think the revolution in culture started 15 years ago in Egypt.
Let's just be clear. I think artists, they always created art, not 10 years, and not 20, and not 50, not 100, and not 500 years ago. Artists from our region, they were always doing art. Now, recently, we are noticing them more. The question is, why? And that has to do because in the Gulf, they started to build their artistic credentials. They just started to build a massive infrastructure for validating art. It starts, actually, with the political system being stable. And then when the political system is stable, then you develop the infrastructure from streets to economy. And then when the economy gets better, then you start to say, what shall we invest in? Or what shall we empower? And then you start to build galleries, kick-in, collectors, universities, auction houses, art fairs, and it goes on and on. Now, I think definitely there was a revolution in the last 10, 15 years in the Gulf, but it was triggered by thirst for an art market. Now, this is okay, because artists cannot live without selling their art. And this is actually an artist's curse. I have to survive on my art. And this, in many ways, contaminates my artistic process if I let go of my dignity, if I let go of things I believe in. Unfortunately, many artists have gone the bad way, and unfortunately, galleries have helped them create art to suit collectors' walls and so on. Now, I think there is a new revolution now happening. There is an army of people from the Arab world, organically now it's happening, that are studying art history, curating all art disciplines in all over the world. And these people now going to lead this revolution and change its direction, change its course. I think they're going to be influential, and they're gaining a lot of power. It's only a question of time where we're going to see a radical shift.
Sam, I wanted to say something.
Go ahead.
Well, I can talk. I think something in Saudi Arabia is a very good case study for this, because I think that there has been a genuine awakening in a really positive way. And I don't think it did start with the market in Saudi Arabia when I first went. I think that there was a need, like an urgent need, for the younger generation to re-establish their own identity. And it went into Islamic culture. They understood that they were at the center of the Islamic world, and that the way that artists were exploring their world from the past generation was totally out of sync with suddenly all these changes. The internet transformed everything in Saudi Arabia, because it was such a huge shift between not having access to information and not knowing your context in the world to suddenly all this new information. What's interesting in Saudi is that the artists they've had this international exposure, but then they've come back into themselves. So the artists who are now working in Mecca, they're really putting a mirror up to their own society, and they're re-exploring even the Quran. You know, they're going into the stories of the Quran and re-exploring these and say, what do these actually mean? It wasn't what the Imam told us in the mosque again and again and again. This is something that we're allowed to look at creatively, which is a very powerful thing if you think how modern Islam has spread around the world. So I think in Saudi there is a genuine awakening, and it's very local, and it's very real.
I was going to let you go on with the question, but I guess I will address it a little bit. I kind of heard it differently, because I just thought we were talking about art in general, not necessarily from the Arab world. I do want to say quickly that I lived in Saudi Arabia in second, third, fourth grade, and Riyadh, actually, and I'm about 40, so you can place that time. I am exactly 40. I'm not afraid to say it. And I think I had a really hard time making certain kinds of work, because when I was growing up in Riyadh, I sketch, and so every time I was listening in class, I would be sketching, and I got in a lot of trouble because I was doing drawings, and they made me always cut, like put a line by the neck or block things out, And it took me a really long time to go out in public in the world with my work because I was so afraid. And then I realized all these people were doing far more interesting and pushing the boundaries work than I was doing when I was in my early 20s. So it's quite exciting to see the young Saudis and what they're pushing with their work. And that's really comforting, not to be challenging Islam, but what it means to be a Muslim and what it means to have a creative voice. And I would say from as an American professor and academic that is, you know, goes to conferences here quite regularly and engaged in this dialogue. And I was on the board of directors of SPE, Society for Photography Education, for the past 4 years. And we have Chewy here in the audience who's there now. We have this real challenge ahead of us because there is, I think, a war against art right now in America. And it has been going for a long time, but it's really happening now. And you know, we even have Obama up there saying that our futures of these humanity degrees don't matter anymore and that we have to train everybody for these sort of, you know, job positions. And that's the kind of work, and as if the humanities, I mean, he targeted art history as being the issue, this president that we all sort of love and hate. It's targeting the humanities, and that's a real problem. And I have a bunch of students who want to study photography and they want to study art, but they want to be in the creative economy of like graphic design and this and that, and make money that looks cool and surfboards. And you have to keep pushing them to understand that art is part of a much larger dialogue of history, of geography, of geopolitics, of science. Of it belongs in a university setting. So I hope that it's going through a sort of, you know, coming back into this wave. It's being important. But I think, you know, even though I use social media and I'm the media professor, but I have to find all kinds of ways to intersect that art making, relevant life and its history. Otherwise, it is problematic.
So, I mean, I just have one last question for you guys, and then we'll see what everybody would like to ask you. And that is, which is a follow-up on this and a final one. So it seems like art goes through different periods of art for art's sake, where artists are so into themselves, and then art gets thrown into the social world, like it is happening in the Arab world now, where artists feel that they have to make big statements to free themselves and society. So what's your thoughts on this? Is this, as an artist, what do you feel? Is this, does art have a social message, or to heck with it, I'm an artist, I just express myself and, you know, they just have to follow me?
I can say it very briefly. It's about speaking about others. Now, when I do my own art, I'm not thinking of Palestine, I'm not thinking of Palestinians, I'm not thinking of the Arab world. I'm creating out of a need because I need to express myself now. It's up to the spectator, to the art historian, to the curator, to see whatever she or he wants to see in my work. I am okay 100% with that. It's not up to me to colonize the meaning of my work. An artwork, once it's created, it has a life of its own, devoid from the life of the artist. Now, it's subject to study, it's subject to criticism, it's subject to many interpretations. So it's totally okay that they can relate it to movements, to relate it to geography. This is all fine. There is no problem with that. It's just sometimes how we keep looping ourselves in these categories and without moving on. But I'm telling you something. I think it's only a question of time till artists themselves also will find their own personal freedom and they will start to defy the system from within to reach a point where we're going to, and I think it's already happening. Look how many solo shows artists from the Arab world are having all over the world. It's a shocking number. If you don't know, I'm telling you, go research. I think artists from the Arab world have more solos in this world, more than any other country in the world. So it is happening. You're witnessing change, and this is a great moment in history.
Yeah, I would say that there's a history meets art history moment now for whatever you want to call it, Arab art. In my case, I believe that the beginning of the 21st century, art history is being written. And art history is not fair. Art history is not written by, you know, some democratic group of people around the world. You know, Cézanne became famous because somebody wrote a book and created the myth of the mad artist who chopped off his ear. It's not really true. But I think that actually probably at the late 20th century was dominated by the US, and especially New York, with a lot of powerful critics, and they created all these movements. It was pop art and abstract expressionism. And I think there's a real chance, and people, writers and people involved, should be excited in the Arab world to get a chapter in 21st century art history, where history and huge forces in geopolitical, economic, cultural forces met with a group of voices who don't necessarily have to be political, but they are part of a number of themes and a number of movements. And I think that that's where it's really important that alongside the artists, there are great writers, there are great contextualizers, great projects, because then when this passes, there will be an alternative story to the one told by the media from this moment in history. And I think that that's an exciting, I mean, I'm British, but I'm excited to be part of a moment where history meets art history, because it doesn't happen very often, and it's very powerful, I think.
I agree with both of what you said, and, you know, just to add to it, as the one person of color in the visual art program in the School of Art at University of Arizona, top 10 photography program in the country, you know, I always felt it was my personal responsibility, not because somebody gave it to me, because it's who I am, to decenter the Western pole of the canon and not, you know, have it always just about the Middle East, but South African artists. And I'll just say, looking at the world globally and looking at what the different artists are doing and interesting intersections of their work. You know, for me, one of the things that we had on the questions that we might be presented with today is that, you know, why did you become an artist? And I have this question all the time when I'm speaking in groups that are not with Arab origins, as many of you are, is this art or is this social practice or activism or, you know, and I would always say no one would be asking this question if I was white and male. It seems when you're white and male, whatever you make, and you're an artist, it's art, right? And then if I make it, it's like, well, it's because, you know, the politics of the Middle East. And that was my issue about the gender thing. It wasn't that my work doesn't reflect gender, issues of gender. It's that I just want to speak with an equal voice with anybody else that's speaking, that my work is not in a very small subcategory and because of. And I don't like to claim why it's not and why it is. For me, the war in Iraq was very transformative. It's being stuck in a place and not being able, my body, not to be able to leave. I was trapped. Moving from country to country was the idea of being a refugee and transnational issues and being displaced and not always being an outsider. And then living the many years as an illegal in America because I had no homeland to return to or that I could return to was this idea of disappearance and absence and hiding and understanding what people who live and have had to leave their region. So those are the political realities that made up of who I am, that walked into my work, and that allowed me to have empathetic understanding of many different issues as they move through in life. The refugee that might be political due to civil war, or war with another country, or because of oil, is the eco-refugees of the future and of now. And every single one of those ideas can be understood in time. So art is social practice, it is political, and at the same time, it's personal, and that's why, for me.
What you just heard was a roundtable discussion I recorded last night at the Arab American Cultural and Community Center with four Photofest artists. It was the first of many other planned events organized by the ACC celebrating the National Arab Heritage Month. For more information on that, visit www.acchouston.org. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. Technology Bites is coming up next. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
We've got a special opportunity for children attending kindergarten in Humble ISD. If you live in Humble ISD and your child will begin kindergarten this upcoming school year, there is a program to help prepare your child for success in the 21st century global village. Imagine the possibilities open for a child that is biliterate, bilingual, and bicultural. Interested parents of children starting kindergarten in Humble ISD for the 2014-2015 school year are invited to attend an informational meeting for the two-way dual-language Spanish program. The meeting will take place at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, April 3rd at Humble Elementary School. The address is 20252 Field Tree Drive. There will be refreshments, door prizes, and free childcare. For more information, visit our website at www.humbleisd.net/bilingual4all.
We live in a world that privileges greed, encourages competition, and runs on fear. We could be living in a world that privileges service, encourages cooperation, and runs on love. Stirrings of that new world are present now, within each of us, and within the social movements we are part of. Join us on Thresholds, 3 to 4 p.m. on Thursdays for conversations with people who are working to make the seeds of that world bloom in the present, to bring into being a world where children can grow up without ever doubting their worth, where women would have the same access to society's resources as men do, where work would be an expression of our love of the world and desire to be of service. You'll hear and be able to speak with people who are attempting to meet the greatest challenges of the present, an increasingly dysfunctional economic system, and an ecological crisis that requires global cooperation to resolve. It's a call-in show.